Hi, my name's Shalane Puglia.
I'm Ryan Lenzner-White.
And I'm Ashish Valentine, and we're the three senior Roger Ebert Fellows at the University of Illinois.
And I'm Michael Phillips, the Chicago Tribune film critic, and I have had the pleasure of being the advisor of these three inaugural Roger Ebert Fellows here. And we're going to talk today, Sunday morning here in the studio here at WILL. We just gotten done with the Roger Ebert Film Festival, and for two of you, I know it was a first-time experience, and for another one of you, it was a third-time experience. But Shalane, why don't you start off and just tell us what the kind of overall impression was for you?
Sure. I mean, I actually haven't seen any of the films that were showing at Roger Ebert Film Festival, which was kind of exciting. I love to be thrown into situations like that where I have the opportunity to see something great and not know it like ahead of time. So one of my favorite things about this festival was just the communal aspect of it. I felt like as the movies progressed, the audience moved with it. And by the time we got to films like Radical Grace, directed by Rebecca Parrish, the audience was emoting with the film. So when there was someone who touched their heart, it was everyone in the audience that made the gasp.
How about you, Ryan?
For me, I mean, it was my first time, like Shalane, and I guess as compared to a lot of other film festivals and like the True False Festival in Colombia that we covered earlier this year, I just felt a lot more organized and just all in one place. And so I didn't have to choose which films I wanted to see. I could see all of them if I wanted to. And as somebody like Shalane who came in and who hadn't seen any of them, I wanted to just do as much as I could and see as much as I could. And it would be hard for me to pick and choose if I didn't really have like
there's no picking and choosing.
Right, exactly.
It is. Yeah, I love this thing because there are no decisions to make.
Yeah. And even everything down to the food vendors, like the ushers would come out and tell them when the credits were about to roll so that they could get ready for like the lunch or dinner rush. And it was just such a communal and positive environment. And everyone just wanted to talk about their work. And I really appreciated that.
Yeah. How about you?
So this is my third time at the festival, and what I've loved about it is just how friendly the filmmakers and the directors and the actors and everybody else are. And what changed this year from the past two times that I've been to festival is just the level of access that I was able to get to all these people. Pretty much at the end of every showing, we were able to go backstage and just talk to people about the films for 10 to 15 minutes. And all of them, even though it was often off the cuff, were just really happy to talk to us. And
you're talking about Guillermo del Toro opening night for Crimson Peak. You're also talking about Casey Lemons,
yes.
Angela Allen,
who came with her film Eve's Bayou. Angela Allen, who was the script supervisor for The Third Man when she was 19 years old, I believe, in 1948.
Yeah,
that kind of access is not easy to get at film festivals.
And not even just the filmmakers and people involved with the films, but down to the projectionists. They let me up in their little dark room and let me film them doing what they do. And I feel like that's not a perspective that a lot of people get to see. And I was really excited about it. And they actually let me come back for 2 days and just film them. And they just had like some crazy stories that you would never picture a projectionist would have, like how Spike Lee rushed their booth a couple of years ago.
Oh, right. For Do the Right Thing, because it was it started off in the wrong frame.
And he was like, I was so embarrassed about it, but I guess good story.
The thing that struck me about just the whole experience in general was the fact that the audience knew their movies so well, and they really came. They've been coming for years, and when they would ask questions at the Q&As that happened after every film, it was about an hour long. They ask things like, I've seen this film, and I just really want to know, like, genuine questions. And it wasn't, what's your favorite part?
Yeah, you know, they weren't superficial.
No, they knew what they were talking about, and it wasn't like they, you know, select people in the audience who they knew were going to ask good questions. Mm-hmm. Just everyone there was genuinely interested in what they had to say.
What did you guys think of the Virginia? Just as a place to see film.
Yeah, I had never been inside the Virginia before, even, and it felt kind of like you were not in Champaign-Urbana anymore.
Yeah, it definitely beat the Carmike. And just it put you in a different mindset to enjoy these films. Like, this is how they should be enjoyed, with, like, these huge audiences in this beautiful theater.
Yeah, it's such a historic and a beautiful building.
Right.
Like, it's not just a movie venue. Like,
it's like a Broadway
plays
hall.
And everything there. And it just works. It's so beautiful.
Well, let's talk a little more about Crimson Peak, because that was the opening night film, and that was a very good get to get the co-writer,
right,
director Guillermo del Toro of Pan's Labyrinth and Pacific Rim into the Virginia to talk about it.
Yeah, so it's like a gothic fairy tale love story, and it's definitely not a style I was used to. It was very gory at times. Shalane and I were sitting together to kind of look at each other sometimes and just be like, no.
I closed my eyes a few times.
And just to be able to talk to Del Toro and hear kind of his vision, and just this guy is so attentive to every little detail, and it's astounding, down to, you know, he refused to use CGI for almost everything. They built that house from the ground up, mm-hmm. the three-story house, and he just wanted everything to be so authentic. And to just hear the way his creative process worked made me enjoy the movie so much more. And just to hear the parts of himself that he put into it, mm-hmm. it was really amazing.
I don't think I would have liked that film as nearly as much as I did if I didn't know the story that Guillermo brought to it.
Let me ask you this. If you had to pick a favorite film this year, what was it?
One of the most surprising and moving films for me was actually director Rebecca Parrish's Radical Grace.
The Vatican reprimanded America's Catholic nuns. The Holy See charged the group with promotion of radical feminist themes incompatible with the Catholic faith.
The Vatican criticized the nuns for focusing too heavily on promoting issues of social justice.
She followed a group of nuns for about 5 years, going through the censure that the Vatican had placed on 59,000 American nuns after they felt that they were being too, quote-unquote, radical feminist. And Rebecca Parrish kind of fell into this project through a friend and met these nuns, and they created this program called Nuns on the Bus. And they actually went around on this bus and went to a bunch of different American cities trying to talk about the censure and just get this out there that they're being treated unfairly by the Vatican, and push for legislation that would be helpful for healthcare within the communities that they were working, because they were really working in these communities.
And this one, Father Flager, among others, came up from Chicago, right?
Yes, he was there. Rebecca Parrish was there. And I just thought it was different than what I expected. I expected it to be this religious film, and really religion wasn't at the heart of it. It was humanity itself. And I think that's what drew Rebecca Parrish in the first place, which is something she talked about in the Q&A. But it was also great to see her kind of transform in owning the film and owning the fact that she was a female director from her Women in Film panel on Friday, which I was at.
And it was early morning. I think there was a sleepy time slot. It's 9 a.m., right?
Yes, yes. But Chaz Ebert was moderating the panel, and she actually had to push Rebecca Parrish to say that she was the director of this film. And she was also the cinematographer. She was also the researcher. There's so many hats that she put on her head. And afterwards, I talked to her for a little bit backstage, and she said that at one point they cover one of the nuns going to Rome, and it was only her and a camera person in Rome. And there's lengthy segments from that. And I'm like, well, did your whole crew come with you? Who did you bring? She's like, no, it was just me and my camera person. So she did all of these things, and it was nice to see her once her film finally came out or finally screened on Saturday. She had a standing ovation after that film. And I think that just gave her such energy, and it was just so nice to see her take ownership of that and all of her titles. And it's inspiring to see a woman like that do a film that resonated so well with a wide audience.
With the crowd, yeah. How about you, favorite?
For me, it was Love and Mercy, and I know...
And this is the Beach Boys biopic of Brian Wilson.
The Brian Wilson Beach Boys one. And going into this festival, I said that this was the film that I was most excited to see, and it surprised me still.
Remember, it's the higher octave on the upbeats in the bridge.
Hey, Brian.
Yeah, I love that.
Brian.
Yeah.
I think you might have screwed up here.
Really? Let me see.
Well, you've got Lyle playing in D, and the rest of us are in A major.
Yeah, that's right.
How does that work? Two bass lines and two different keys?
Well, it works in my head. I mean, it's all playing in my head, the orchestration and the five vocal parts. I think it's going to work. Let's try it.
I mean, I love looking into people's dark, weird minds and seeing the beautiful things that come out of it. To me, that's fascinating. I don't know. As somebody who didn't grow up on the Beach Boys, and our generation, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, we kind of think they're a little bit cheesy. Oh, yeah. But to just have this deep, deep film that so profoundly and so uniquely describes mental illness and the creative use of music and layers, and it really to me, showed how Brian Wilson probably coped with the fact that he was losing his mind in a time like 1963, where you didn't talk about mental illness. You didn't go to somebody and say and have them say, you're not crazy. This is just something separate from you. I don't know. It really spoke to
really
me.
Really hit you. Yeah. No, yeah. It hit me too. And I knew nothing. I knew next to nothing
about Brian
Wilson's life.
It's heartbreaking, but it's amazing.
Yeah. Ash, did you have a particular favorite?
Yeah.
Or did you love them all equally?
I love them all, but I think my favorite would have to be Eve's Bayou, actually, directed by Casey Lemons.
All I know is there must be a divine point to it all, and it's just over my head. That when we die, it will all come clear, and we'll say, so that was the damn point. And sometimes I think there's no point at all, and that's the point. All I know is most people's lives are a great disappointment to them. And no one leaves this earth without feeling terrible pain. And if there is no divine explanation at the end of it all, that's sad.
It's about a family in a small Louisiana town. And on the surface, there isn't a whole lot going on at the beginning. But really interestingly, the film becomes this sort of magically realist exploration of the idea of truth and of memory and how subjective characters perceive memory very differently. And so really shocking, disturbing things happen that kind of fracture this family apart. And the dilemma at the center of the film is that each character remembers the event very differently. And their remembering of the event kind of colors how they respond to it. And eventually, the characters need to reconcile their versions of the event with each other. And it's very interesting because each character experiences reality in a very different way. For example, a couple of the characters are psychic, and so they can kind of get in touch with how people are doing several thousands of miles away or with events that happened in the past. There's this one beautiful scene where one of the characters, I think her name is Moselle, is looking into a mirror. And she actually sees the scene of her ex-husband being shot by her lover playing out in the mirror in front of her.
That's a great moment where she actually walks into the mirror into her own memory of the past. Yeah,
that was an amazing moment.
And that was a very, I thought, a revealing moment in the Q&A afterwards with the director, Casey Lemons, where she explained just how difficult it was to get the right lens, the right zoom lens to pull off that shot.
Well, that scene wasn't even planned.
Even to get the scene in. She like wanted it in, and I guess her producers were kind of like, oh, that's a throwaway scene. So they kind of snuck it in to shooting. And she said she was just on a plane with one of the people that she was working with. And all of a sudden there was this mirror that they couldn't move in the house. And
all worked with the house that she was given. So,
yeah.
And it became one of her favorite scenes, I think she said, too.
Yeah. That's great. That's kind of, for me, that would be the moment where everybody there, who whatever one thought of the movie, Eve's Bayou, to kind of hear the director explain how kind of a key moment visually was done, as you say, you know, sort of on the sly, because the producer said it was, you know, they didn't want to spend the money to get the lens. And you know,
she said it just came to her when she was on a plane, and she just drew it out on the back of the script, how it was going to work with the shots and everything, and that's just what came out of it was probably one of the most notable moments in the film.
Ash, Ryan, Shalane, thank you very much for your report here on the 18th Ebert Fest. And we'll talk to you again.
Thank you so much.